Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.
Historically, thousands of murders are classified as unsolved across the UK. Modern forensic techniques help families find justice even after decades have passed. I'm Winston Clarkson, and I've worked inside the underworld for more than 30 years, alongside police officers, forensic scientists, and criminals. My research has included prison visits, surveillance operations, police raids, and even post-mortems. And now I want to take you on a journey into modern forensic science.
You're listening to the Real Silent Witnesses podcast from Graphic Audio, a podcast series that delves into the scientific leaps in forensics.
In each episode, we'll meet forensic experts and journalists who work tirelessly to help families that deserve answers, and we'll examine the techniques that help solve the most difficult cold cases. Throughout the show, you'll hear extracts from my audiobook, The Real Silent Witnesses. This is The Real Silent Witnesses, inside the Silent Witness TV show. Our guest today is journalist Laurel Graber. Laurel is an award-winning freelance writer and editor who contributes frequently to the New York Times, and she has contributed to many other US publications, such as The Wall Street Journal. I'm going to discuss with her the key ingredients that have made BBC Silent Witness one of TV's longest-running dramas based around forensic science. Is it an accurate portrayal of reality, or is it the fictionalization of reality? For those who are not familiar with the show, Silent Witness was first aired in 1996 and is one of the most popular crime dramas on UK TV. Laurel, I know you're a great fan of the BBC drama Silent Witness. In an article you wrote for the New York Times in August 2020, you confessed having binge-watched the whole show during lockdown. And this is why I'd like to discuss with you the good, the bad, and the ugly sides of the series, and why it appeals so much to US audiences as well as UK. Let's dig in. Silent Witness no doubt helps viewers to understand the intricacies of forensic science. What's your overall opinion of the show?
I really am, as you can imagine, a huge fan. I find it very compelling, both from the standpoint of the drama of the characters and the way their individual lives and backstories are explored, and also the complexity of the mysteries. I find it fascinating to watch how the science of forensics is involved, how the autopsies are conducted, and how they come up with clues that allow them to solve whatever the case is.
While writing my audiobook, I talked to the show's producers to find out what they thought was the formula to the success of the series. Here's what I found.
One of the keys to that success is that Silent Witness is constantly looking for fresh ideas and new, original plot lines, while at the same time serving up some serious drama, as well as the obligatory explosions, drugs, and death. Ever since its launch, the series has been praised for its determination to accurately reflect forensic science and the role of its experts in helping to bring criminals to justice. From pre-production on Silent Witness's very first episode back in 1996, right up to today's version, the series has always had at least one respected forensic advisor on set to make sure the series achieves that finely balanced line between reality and good drama. The forensic consultants attached to every series of Silent Witness since its launch all those years ago operate in conjunction with the show's director, producers, writers, and cast to ensure that the series achieves an air of authority. To many in the forensic profession, These program consultants are the unsung heroes who make sure that forensic science is fairly and accurately portrayed in Silent Witness. Most agree they have achieved that in most instances. It's not been an easy balancing act for the technical advisors, though. One source inside Silent Witness told me that its team of writers often use the show's forensic consultant for reference material so that an episode can be rounded off with an unusual type of death, because perfect cliff-edge endings remain the prerequisite for all good TV drama. As one former producer of the show explained, it's all about suspending disbelief when it comes to good drama. You have to believe in the characters and the plausibility of the plot lines. That's why the forensic consultant is such an important part of the program. But you also have to allow a drama to take you on a ride into a world that may not really exist. Silent Witness doesn't want to overplay the technical side of forensic science, but at the same time, the viewers must believe the show's characters know what they're talking about. The same veteran BBC producer added, "You can't get everything absolutely accurate because that might mean sacrificing good drama, which is ultimately what the audience expects. But it's vital to convince the viewers that this is as real as any drama can be."
This producer suggested that balancing drama and accuracy has been pivotal to the success of the show. Obviously, the characters in the show have to solve cases quite quickly because they need to be compressed within the limited time span of the program. I don't think that takes anything away from it. What are your feelings on that?
No, I don't think it does either. I think it is kind of impossible for television to follow or to mimic the time frame of real life and the solution of crimes. I know when I read about a case in the newspaper or hear about it on the news frequently, they don't have autopsy results for a few weeks, and then there are further test results that haven't come back. It's a very long and laborious process, and I think you have to compress that to have effective television.
Now, Silent Witness has been around for a lot longer than Netflix and all the other streaming services. They've cornered a market in continual drama, I guess is what you call it, where it literally goes from series to series in terms of the actual thread, dramatic thread of the program. With Silent Witness, of course, it's normally a three-parter, maybe a four-parter, and that's a self-contained story. Do you think, actually, in a weird way, Silent Witness is, because it's slightly different from what is now the norm in terms of streaming services, it's actually helping it?
Well, I found that I appreciated the format a lot when I was watching it, because frequently, at least initially, a series would have a mystery or a plot that played out over two episodes. And it was like watching a good two-hour movie every night when I would watch that. And I found that there was a continuing arc with the characters, if not the mystery itself. And I liked the fact that something could be wrapped up perhaps in 2 hours, but then I knew that I could come back to it the following night and there would be another great mystery unfolding over 2 hours.
So it's that short-term sense of anticipation that seems to pull in a lot of people. If I think of a similar show in the US, an obvious comparison comes to mind, and that is CSI. Both shows have been around for a long time. They've both done incredibly well. How does CSI and other US shows stack up against Silent Witness?
Well, I have found that both CSI and Law and Order Special Victims, SVU, which has run for 22 seasons, almost as long as Silent Witness, they're both intriguing series, but they are network series and not on the streaming services. And one thing that has always bothered me a little bit about them is that basically it's 1 hour, a 1 hour story. And to me, that's that's not quite enough. Everything tends to be wrapped up, except they have an occasional series of episodes where something is continuing. But I found the silent witness format more satisfying, and also the character depth more satisfying.
In both CSI and Silent Witness, the forensics appear to involve themselves in the interrogation of suspects sometimes. This rarely happens in real life, but obviously it's a dramatic a thing that's needed for the dramatic thread. It's a device in a sense. While working on my audiobook, I collected the opinions of police officers, detectives, and criminals about the authenticity of the series. Here's what they said.
Sometimes it seems as if the scientists are beating the police to the scene of actual crimes, and it's never like that in real life, said one recently retired London Murder Squad detective. Other police officers say that scenes featuring forensic scientists sitting in on actual interviews of suspects are somewhat far-fetched. One former detective explained, "There is no way I'd allow a boffin to sit in on an interview I was conducting with a criminal." I'm extremely relieved to see that Silent Witness has cut back on doing that in the more recent episodes, but the makers need to be careful not to allow it to creep back in. One former murder detective told me, "The scientists don't always appreciate they need us just as much as we need them, and that needs to continue to be carefully portrayed in the series. After all, we're still the ones who at the end of the day have to add two and two together to get the actual results. We are the ones who have to go right into the firing line regardless of the danger." Although you don't always get that impression from Silent Witness. Some of today's criminals claim that Silent Witness itself gives the impression that forensic investigators are godlike figures who are never wrong. One former bank robber told me, "The way they make it look on Silent Witness, there is virtually no point in being a criminal because you never get away with anything." But that's not always the case. Those forensic scientists may be clever when it comes to test tubes and DNA swabs, but they're not out on the streets literally catching the villains. I reckon there are still opportunities out there for good operators who know how to spot an opportunity. While some forensic scientists I've spoken to have questioned the authenticity of Silent Witness, none have criticized its unique ability to ensure that studying the dead appeals to such a wide cross-section of the viewing public. Silent Witness's producers have even recently scaled back the Lyle staff's close involvement with the police during investigations. Today's episodes have gone out of their way to emphasize a clear line between the scientists and the police.
Obviously, stretching reality is something that needs to be done for the dramatic thread of the program. It is a device, in a sense. What do you feel about that? Does tweaking with reality make the series too far-fetched? Or do you think that is really allowable in dramatic terms?
Well, I think it is stretching it, certainly, in terms of reality. But I think as long as it's not too intrusive to the viewer, it's not a problem. I think most people are probably aware that pathologists don't get involved in any sort of interrogation of a suspect. And that may be off-putting to some viewers, but I found that with Silent Witness, their involvement seemed to occur more often sort of behind the scenes, where they were going back to visit the scene of a crime, or perhaps they were going to a place where they could watch people that were suspicious, but there wasn't an excess of involvement in the police interviews.
Right. And some so-called experts say that the way that Silent Witness is structured, it sort of ticks the boxes in a way these other shows we've just discussed possibly don't. But on the downside, do you think that Silent Witness can survive for another 20 series, or do all these programs come to a natural end?
I certainly think that Silent Witness is good enough to survive for many, many more seasons. I would hope that it would. And I think that it's shown remarkable resilience in being able to adapt to the various exits of major characters. For instance, when Amanda Burton wanted to leave the series and she was its initial star, I know that people feared that that could doom the series, but it did not. And I think as long as it has the high quality writing, it could conceivably go on for much longer.
What you're saying reminds me of a chapter in my audiobook where I wrote about how the producers fitted the new actress into the role of the main character. Let's have a listen.
Back in 2004, actress Amanda Burton, who played the original lead pathologist Sam Ryan, took the Silent Witness producers by surprise and decided to quit. She'd featured in the first seven series following its launch in 1996. One BBC insider claimed at the time, "Amanda definitely knows her own mind. Her departure is a blow to the BBC and puts the future of Silent Witness in doubt." At first, there were rumours that the series would be shelved because its main star was no longer on board. But like all well-established entities, whether it be a football team or a TV drama series, the management of Silent Witness was never going to let it perish just because one person had decided to jump ship. A decision was made following Amanda Burton's departure in 2004 to change the direction of the series and take it more upmarket by recruiting actress Amelia Fox as star pathologist Nikki Alexander. She came from the Fox acting dynasty and was about as far removed from the blunt, plain-speaking character Sam Ryan as you can get. Amelia Fox immediately fitted into her role almost seamlessly, and within weeks of her debut as lead pathologist Nikki Alexander, fans of the show were voicing their approval of her character, and appeals for the return of her predecessor Sam Ryan soon faded out. Since then, Amelia Fox's character Nikki has gone from strength to strength, thanks to a combination of vulnerability and toughness when it comes to the way she leads her life as a sometimes lonely middle-aged lady. A lot of the show's female fans who've tuned into the series since Nikki's introduction believe they have a connection with Silent Witness because Nikki goes through so many classic domestic problems during the course of the show. Some viewers even openly admit that Silent Witness's pivotal dramatic content that revolves around dead bodies is nothing more than a side issue compared to following glamorous Nikki's domestic and professional life with all its complicated twists and turns. One ardent fan of Silent Witness explained, "The series has managed to weave everyday storylines into the main thrust of each episode to guarantee that no matter how technical the forensic details are, the everyday pressures of life are not ignored. It's clever because it means one doesn't really consider the series to be a procedural drama, although at the end of the day, it is very much that."
What's interesting is Amanda Burton's character and Amelia Fox's character are very different, actually. And yet there was a seamless handover, in a sense, which, in fact, the programme became more popular. Why do you think that is? Because they are two such different actresses and they convey a different atmosphere.
They do. I think, though, both characters exhibit a great deal of strength. And while I was initially very skeptical of Nikki Alexander, I thought, oh no, they've replaced Sam Ryan with a young blonde. Yes, and is the show going to go off now in a more superficial direction that I won't like? But that didn't happen. And I think what unites the two heroines really is that they're very different, but they both have an extremely strong moral sense and a tremendous integrity and honesty that are, you know, central to the core of the series.
I noticed one falls in love, metaphorically speaking, with these characters. So do you feel any connection in that sense to the characters, or which ones do you feel the connections to the strongest in Silent Witness?
I felt a strong connection to a lot of them, and I found myself being quite sorry when the actor left, and therefore that character's storyline was not going to be continued. As I said, I was disappointed to see Amanda Burton go, and it took me a bit of time to warm up to the new character of Nikki Alexander, played by Amelia Fox, but ultimately I did. And I also found that she seemed to acquire more gravitas as the series went on, and also as she became older, because she has been with the series for such a long time. And I felt very bad when Tom Ward left, because I loved the Harry Cunningham character, and I really enjoyed the sort of simmering possibilities of romance between, you know, him and Nikki, which ultimately did not lead to anything. But I found I have become quite attached to very many of them, and I felt bad as well in the conclusion of the most recent season. Particularly, well, two characters were eliminated in that finale, but I particularly felt bad to lose Clarissa Mullery, because I thought she was witty and fascinating.
She was a unique character in that show. I know she's gone on to make a couple of movies now, and I've got a feeling, someone was telling me connected to the show, that she might come back eventually. But going back to Amanda Burton, who was the original main character in Silent Witness, she was more, I would say, a more unique character back in 95 than possibly she would be if she'd emerged now. And yet, Amelia Fox's character, Nikki, as you so rightly said, took a bit of getting used to, because in a way she seemed a little bit predictable at the beginning. But actually, to be fair, she evolved into a much more interesting character than I thought she would. But she's much more glamorous than Amanda, isn't she?
Yes, she definitely is. And of course, that was partly why I was a bit skeptical of her at the beginning, because of that sort of youth and glamour. But it's been interesting to see her evolve. And it kind of amused me as well to see toward the end of the most recent series of episodes and in the last season, she wasn't even a blonde anymore.
We're talking about Amelia Fox's character, Nikki. How would you like to see her develop as a character now? After all these years she's been on the show, what direction do you think she should go to in order to sustain the audience's interest in her?
I would actually like to see the domestic side of her life have something of a happy resolution. Not that I think it's necessary for a lead female character to necessarily marry or have children, but one thing that I find is kind of a cliche among dramas with strong female characters is that they're never allowed to have a lasting relationship. If they get involved with someone, he has to die, or he has to leave, or something terrible has to happen to end the relationship. And I found it interesting that now in Silent Witness, she does have a long distance relationship and is trying to make it work. And I would like to see it work. I would like to see Silent Witness sort of buck the trend and allow her to have a satisfying personal life as well as a satisfying scientific life.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if she just had a very boring domestic life? And then the contrast with her work in the lab and her work out on the road as a forensic scientist would be even greater, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think it would. But I think it would also perhaps bring an added dimension to the series. I wouldn't think it would need to be focused on it, you know, all the time or to a great degree, but it would also bring in some interesting complexities, because if a professional woman has a family, of course, there are, you know, more demands on her time. And also there are more possibilities for a crisis. Certainly her family would be vulnerable to criminal elements, perhaps in plots, if she were to, you know, to have children.
Absolutely. And where do you think generally this insatiable, apparently insatiable appetite for programs about forensic science Where do you think this comes from? What is it that appeals to such a wide audience when it comes to something that's quite graphic and very scientific, of course?
Well, I think that everyone is fascinated by a really good mystery. And I think also most people have a passing knowledge of some basic elements of forensic science. I think that most people, even if they don't have a university education, have a sense of what DNA is and know the role that it can play in scientific deduction. And I think that that awareness has helped. Plus, nowadays, there's all this proliferation of companies that will analyze your own DNA for you and tell you about your ancestry. And that has caught on very much. And that has also played a role now in the solving of crime.
Well, I think that in the case of the interstate serial killer in California, that was exactly how, after many years of not solving that crime, how that particular criminal appears to have been brought to justice. And this overlap between DNA in terms of how it's used to solve crimes and how it's used to show us who our long-lost relatives are weirdly meets in the middle. And that's definitely going to have more and more of an effect, isn't it?
Yes, I think it does. I think it brings the public more into the process. And, you know, they can see how there are perhaps certain mysteries in their own lives that are revealed through this technology. And then hearing about how it's been amplified in police work is fascinating.
Now, the police or the relationship between the police officers and the forensic scientists led by Nikki and Silent Witness is quite convivial. I believe, having written books in America and the UK and interviewed a lot of police officers over the last 30 years, up to about 20 years ago, the relationship was a little bit tense often between forensic scientists and police officers. But now, do you think that Silent Witness and possibly some of the other dramas we've talked about are a fair reflection of the fact they seem to be working alongside each other much more than they used to?
I think it probably is a fair reflection. I would suspect, of course, that they would have a close involvement with the police. Certainly, I know that the relationship can be contentious when, for instance, the other side of the case brings in another independent pathologist to do another autopsy, and then you can have conflicting sides. In Silent Witness, I occasionally found that the relationship was a little too convivial. I know in the early seasons, Sam would get involved with some of the police officers, and I thought that was way off base.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Moving on, I'd like to ask you a question about the location of the show. But before that, let's have a listen to what a producer told me about locating the series in London.
Getting Silent Witness to work is all down to a finely tuned balancing act between writers, actors, and the director. The core of the drama always revolves around the Lyle Center's scientific expertise to solve a series of troubling, often violent crimes, usually in the vicinity of London. But why is Silent Witness so closely aligned with London? Many believe this was a conscious decision by producers of the series to turn London into a character in its own right, so it can feed into the show's storylines more easily. One veteran TV producer explained, "London is a diverse city full of dramatic potential, and it is evolving all the time, just like Silent Witness itself. I know some people wish it was located in another area of the UK, but London is at the heart of everything on the show, and it provides a unique canvas. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that if it wasn't located in London, then the series itself might have run out of steam by now. It's that important to Silent Witness's success."
So producers consider the location, London, as an important factor to the successful outcome of the show. How important is that in the US? Or is it more possible that you and Americans are sort of endeared by Silent Witness more because it's British?
I find in general that I gravitate toward British mysteries because I think they're extremely well done, more complex in some ways than some of the American series I've watched. And I've always appreciated that. It is true, however, that not knowing the intricacies of the British system, I have to take a lot of things on faith, and I'm certainly not sitting in front of my television thinking, gee, that doesn't quite add up to what I know when I was last on a jury, because it's different.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, also, if you were watching a drama and you were thinking like that, the drama wouldn't be working, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
And that sort of takes me into the next point, which is, do you think the fact that it's made in the UK, as far as the American audience is concerned, mean it's easier to suspend disbelief, which, of course, is the key to enjoying drama?
I think to some extent that's true, although certainly I believe the British system is not that different in certain ways. And I've sort of enjoyed remarking to myself on what some of the similarities and differences are. But certainly the American system, of course, is descended from the British system. And yes, to some extent, I guess it's easier to sort of sit back and not worry when there is that difference. But I think that it's nice to have the similarities because it also gives the show plausibility.
These days, maybe because of the pandemic, I've noticed a lot more conversations going on between people about shows that they're recommending to each other to watch. This perhaps wasn't the case before. What do you feel about that?
Certainly, it's been a way during the pandemic for people to stay connected. It's an experience that they can share and talk about. I did watch a few Silent Witness episodes with my daughter because last summer at the time I was working on the New York Times article about Silent Witness. We had a terrible storm and a power outage where I live. And I went to my daughter's apartment to finish working on the article. And she and I did sit together and watch some episodes and enjoyed them. And I think it's always great to, particularly if you're sort of shut indoors, to be able to have something exciting to share with your friends.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote that article you wrote was really about how you binge watch the series. Do you find some people prefer to watch all the episodes of one Silent Witness story in one night?
Yes, I mean, I found, as I said, that I was often doing a storyline every night. I would watch two episodes, which would usually be one plot line. And then the next night I would watch another two and I would keep doing that. There were times that I was so hooked on the drama, however, when I might have even watched four or five in one sitting.
And this is something that's happening with so much TV drama that you spot the holes perhaps more if you're watching one episode after another without a gap. You know, if we went back a few years, we'd have to wait a week to see the next episode. And so, therefore, the critique of a program is much sharper because you don't even have that gap. Because let's face it, if you have a one-week gap between episodes, you forget a little bit. Okay, you have the reminders at the beginning. And also you build up to the next episode more. If it's a relentless thing, do you think that's a more enjoyable process when it comes to watching drama, or is it less enjoyable?
I find it's more enjoyable. And what I love about streaming is that you often have the choice. You can watch as much or as little as you like at one time. But I do like having the ability to continue immediately because, as you said, you can forget plot points over the course of a week. And there's something very enjoyable about being able to sort of be carried on the tide of the story from beginning to end without interruption.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And are there any scenes or episodes that you ever go back to watch a second or third time?
Yes. In fact, when I was with my daughter, I wanted to introduce her to the show, and I tried to show her a couple episodes that I thought were sort of quintessential Silent Witness and ones that I had really enjoyed, because at that point I had seen all of them.
So talk us through a couple of your favorites.
Well, one of my favorites was, of course, the Bloodlines, when Harry appears to actually have been killed. That's in season 14. I found myself watching it and sort of going over the intricacies of the mystery again and how they sort of managed to pull it off. Another one that I really found very distinctive was in season 8, A Time to Heal, which was really the series episodes that resolved what had happened to Sam Ryan's father, who was a policeman in Northern Ireland. And his death, of course, was what led her to become a forensic pathologist. I mean, I could go on. I also was a huge fan. I think season 14 was stellar with an episode called The Prodigal, which was about shootings at the Dutch embassy. It looked like an assassination attempt, but it was something far different.
And when you revisit some of these episodes, do you notice more stuff than you did the first time round? Or is it less? I mean, obviously, they're satisfying. Do you have a sense of anticipation? Sometimes when you know what's coming, we all do this. If we watch a film, a movie that we've seen before, we maybe 5 years later want to watch it again or even less. We look forward to certain scenes.
Yes, particularly when I was watching Bloodlines, I remembered, of course, that Harry was not really dead. And of course, I have to say, since it was not the end of the season, I did have a strong feeling, even the first time I watched it, that he would turn out to be alive. But I didn't remember exactly how he managed to fake his death. And I did have a great deal of anticipation, thinking, well, now I'm going to be able to see again how the character pulled it off. And this is really interesting.
And going back to Law and Order, which you mentioned earlier, of course, that's a 1 hour self-contained episode. And I've watched many of them. It's a very set story. It's within a certain mold. And I find myself frustrated sometimes because I know they've got to tick certain boxes. And yet I don't feel that was Silent Witness. Do you agree on that?
Yes, I agree. And I also found one thing that I really liked about Silent Witness was the tremendous breadth of the subject matter. When you're watching one of the Law and Order franchises, there's always going to be some sort of horrific sexual assault or trafficking or something like that. Whereas Silent Witness did have a number of episodes that dealt with trafficking, but they also dealt with, you know, military grade weapons, toxins, environmental destruction, gang war. I mean, virtually everything you could think of in the criminal sphere came up in Silent Witness.
And of course, with Silent Witness, you don't have commercial breaks. So there's not this necessity to get you to a point where the audience are desperate for more. And then bang, you go into the commercials. What difference does that make to you as a viewer?
I think it does make a difference. It preserves the momentum of the plot. It, I think, assists in the energy, and it certainly, keeps you rooted. I found that, it was very hard for me to pause an episode of Silent Witness, if I wanted to get a bite to eat or something. It was too intriguing, and I had to sit there. And granted, I didn't have the advantage of a commercial break, which sort of forced me to move away from my seat. But I liked having that preservation of the momentum and the energy.
Now, we've been full of praise for Silent Witness. But I think we have to be fair and balanced as responsible journalists here and say, have there, and for me to ask you, have there been episodes where you thought this is not so good? I've maybe seen the joins in the story or this is ridiculous.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I certainly found myself grown in one episode in the earlier part of the show's history when Sam Ryan got romantically involved with a man who turned out to be a killer. And it seemed to be very uncharacteristic of her character to, first of all, not to have the initial kind of skepticism of this man. I thought she believed him far too readily. And then to get that intimately involved just seemed, completely outrageous to me. Granted, later on in Silent Witness, they didn't do that kind of thing as much. I remember that Nikki had a brief fling at one point with a young police officer, and then I think he said something that was horribly bigoted or racist, and that led her to move away from that. But I think those particular liaisons should not have been part of the plots and really were not at all realistic or true to these characters' integrity.
And the show itself has, I've noticed, been very good at moving with the times, the way it's tackled racism, homophobia, sexism, etc. Do you see that, or is it maybe too obvious? I'm not sure.
I have welcomed the fact that it has tackled those particular issues. It was gratifying to see that, Silent Witness had an episode that explored the AIDS crisis at the time. And that was when Amanda Burton was still playing the central role. I have found that it has exhibited an awareness of a lot of the issues that you mentioned. Certainly having the Clarissa Mullery character, who is a woman with a disability who uses a wheelchair, but who obviously is a strong character and definitely put it before the public that people with disabilities could do an amazingly difficult job. So I appreciated those things. I do kind of wish that Silent Witness would have a leading character, perhaps, who is not white and very, sort of Anglo. I do think the series sort of has an opportunity right now because it lost two of its main characters at the end of season 23. One of them was killed off and the other, decided to leave the business. So now they have two major cast openings. I'm going to be interested to see what they do.
One of them was Dr. Chamberlain. It did seem a very dramatic end. How did you tackle that one? What were your thoughts on that?
I found his death, which I had not anticipated when I originally watched the episode, I found his death then very upsetting and very sad. They really sort of set it up emotionally with there was interplay with his young daughter in the earlier half of the finale. And you, of course, were immediately aware that this child was going to be bereaved.
So I've only watched the show once, but you watched it a second time. Does it mean that you got more involved in it the second time round?
I was actually a little more detached the second time, which was why I noticed, at one moment he's in terrible pain and now he's finding that he can tell, Nikki and Clarissa what to do and to say goodbye to his daughter for him. So I don't think I was quite as emotionally involved, but I was every bit as intellectually involved.
So the show is fairly popular in America, I believe. Its popularity seems to have grown gradually, but I'm not quite clear on how popular it really is compared to some of the big dramas.
Yes, I was trying to find that out, and I did email a contact from either the BBC or BritBox here, someone I had worked with when I was doing the article, to see if there were statistics on it, but I did not hear back. I can tell you one thing, though, when I wrote the Silent Witness essay, and certainly the New York Times tracks how many people, you know, click on an article that has been published digitally. This was the only article I've written in my career since the advent of the internet that got 250,000 page views.
Wow. Are you on a commission per click?
I wish.
Yes. Yeah, that's fantastic. And that maybe does give one an insight, because that many people clicking the article, and one presumes probably only 20% maybe would click on the article who actually watched the program.
Yes, I think probably so. And I think it shows what an appetite there is for this type of mystery. I know that one thing that seemed to have helped the popularity of the article was that there were a couple of social media groups that were Facebook groups, you know, people who were interested in British crime shows, for instance, they would post a link to the article on Facebook, and that, of course, would lead to more views. And I even found, because the New York Times has a system that tracks these basically for only for 28 days. And so I knew it was 250,000 after the initial 28 days. And if you go back and look at the metrics, it will only tell you what has happened in the past 28 days. It doesn't give you the initial numbers. And I found when I went back to the article recently and just out of curiosity looked to see how many page views it had gotten. And in a recent month, it had gotten over 800. And this was an article that was published last August.
Extraordinary, isn't it? I don't even know if you are a fan of true crime documentaries. Is that a genre you've watched quite a lot of, or is it just occasionally something very big comes up? Do you study them at all?
I did watch with great fascination the recent documentary that was made about the Golden State Killer in California, but it was really the story of the woman who had worked so hard to find out who he was on her own through going back through records. And it was a fascinating documentary because it was her story as well as the story of the killer and the case. I have watched on occasion a short program that I think is quite popular here in the U.S. called Forensic Files, which is all about true crime.
Right. And what about any classics in recent years that you might have watched on Netflix? For example, there have been a few that have done incredibly well. Making a Murderer is one, but have you watched any of those?
I watched one quite a long time ago. I believe it was called The Thin Blue Line, which I thought was just an extraordinary piece of documentary filmmaking.
In terms of content, it was phenomenal. And I think we could both recommend that to anyone out there who wants to look at the sort of the nearest thing to a perfect true crime movie length documentary. Do you think that shows like Silent Witness are influenced by true crime documentaries, or do you think they just stick to the drama and make everything and build everything around that?
I think they are influenced very much by true crime. I can't speak exactly to Silent Witness because I don't live in Britain, but certainly you see, I think, evidence of how some of these shows have drawn from the headlines. Certainly with Law and Order, it would be very noticeable to me because occasionally I would see something in the way of crime news and I would think, wow, that would make a great Law and Order plot. And lo and behold, a year or so later, there would be a Law and Order episode that was very, very similar to what had happened in real life.
I think Law and Order has always been renowned for that. It's certainly not so apparent with Silent Witness. Although, actually, you may or may not be aware, there was a two-part episode that was shelved completely. But let's hear everything about that episode with a passage from my audiobook.
In 2012, the most controversial of all episodes was filmed at a cost of almost £2 million. But it was never actually aired, for Silent Witness had unintentionally encroached into a real-life crime case that almost plunged the show into the center of a real-life scandal. The two-part episode called And Then I Fell in Love was scrapped at the last minute because it too closely mirrored an actual child sex grooming case in Rochdale in the north of England. This much-anticipated Silent Witness two-parter had featured Dr. Nikki Alexander stumbling across a sinister underworld where teenage girls were groomed for sex and forced into prostitution. The comparisons to the real case were pretty obvious. The BBC were obliged to replace the two-part special with a repeat because of resemblances between the story and that of the case of nine men accused of a child sex exploitation ring. BBC bosses decided it would be too insensitive to show the episode over the bank holiday weekend of the 6th and 7th of May 2012, as the trial of the men hadn't yet come to a close at Liverpool Crown Court. The corporation did not want to take any legal risks, as is the way with most factual and non-factual television these days. It was possible that the episodes in question might be seen as influencing the decision of the jury in that trial. This meant the programme could be risking a contempt of court accusation. After the BBC had slotted two repeat episodes in place of the child grooming shows, a message was even posted on the BBC website stating, "We are aware of inquiries from viewers who want to know when the two-part Silent Witness episode And Then I Fell in Love will be shown." But the real reason for the switch was not announced in public and, as a result, many viewers were left angry by the sudden decision to drop a news story they'd been looking forward to seeing. Some viewers even took to social media message boards to vent their frustration at the unexplained absence of this highly anticipated two-parter.
So this happened because in Britain we have a different basic law, which means that you cannot reveal details of a case until it has been dealt with properly in court. While in America, I've even written books about cases that have not got to court yet. And they had to shelve this entire episode because it was too similar to a huge court case that was going on in the north of England. And that obviously cost them a lot of money. But more importantly, it was the only time they've had to scrap two parts of one dramatic story.
Yes, I read about that in a passage from your recent book where you discuss that. And I remember thinking that's quite extraordinary that they had to shelve an entire episode and broadcast a rerun because they couldn't use it.
Yeah, and that sums up something we said earlier about the similarities in the law of the lands of both America and UK. But this is the one difference. It's called sub judice. You cannot publish, televise, or anything, or promote any crime if it has not been dealt with in court before. And of course, in the States, that is not the case. I don't know whether it's a good or bad thing. And that's a different debate for another time.
Yeah, it is a very interesting distinction. And I think probably it does create complexities in the U.S. because one of the problems that arises with juries is there's a concern about, you know, how much they know, how much they've read, how much they might have been influenced before they try to deal with a case.
Absolutely. Now, going back to the, well, we were talking about the real world in a sense. Have you ever, I know you don't cover crime, but have you ever written about or visited a real forensic science lab or ever got close to it?
No, I have not. I mean, I think it would be fascinating to visit or see one. And I have not come close to that. I think one of the things about Silent Witness is that's interesting is that it does take you so much inside the lab and shows you step by step exactly what pathologists do. I know some people may be put off a little bit by the blood and gore, but if you're not squeamish, it's very interesting.
Well, the most popular reaction from professional forensic scientists is that the lab looks immaculate. It's a bit like someone's desk whenever you worked in newspapers. If the desk was covered in chaos, it was normally showed that person was covering a lot of stories. And in the case of the labs on Silent Witness, the lab does look immaculate. And I think that's one of the strongest criticisms from professional forensic scientists about the show.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, certainly if people, scientists are working hard and under pressure, you are likely to see, I think, more of a mess. On the other hand, I do think that there's something resonant about the cleanliness of the place, because you also don't want to feel that people who are dealing with samples are being so messy that something could be contaminated, because it's very important that someone's DNA doesn't get mixed up with another person's DNA.
Now, to sum up, Laurel, why would you recommend to anyone, if you're at a dinner party and someone said, what's a good show to watch? And you said Silent Witness, how would you describe why it's a good show to watch?
Well, I would say that it's an excellent show because it is so multidimensional. Some crime series are very interesting in terms of the plots and the details and the mysteries, but they neglect somewhat the full dimensions of the characters. The intricacies of forensics may take precedence over whether you empathize with the lead character. And I think that Silent Witness is very compelling because it has very interesting and intriguing mysteries that I think are not at all obvious. It's sometimes very hard to know what's going to happen. And Silent Witness has a number of episodes with amazing twists. But it's also satisfying because the characters are so fully realized. Each one of them has a backstory. With virtually all the main characters, you would see how that person's backstory also influenced various elements of the plot, how it made the person approach a case in a certain way, or in some cases, the backstory became the story, as it did with Sam Ryan and her father in that concluding episode.
And what are your hopes for the next series? How do you envisage it will evolve?
Well, I hope that Nikki becomes the leader of the Lyle Center. Now that the Thomas Chamberlain character is dead, obviously someone needs to take on that lead role. And I think after all these years, it should be Nikki. I think it was good in some ways that it became more of an ensemble show after Amanda Burton left. But there is always someone who is the boss and the chief. And I think that I would like to see Nikki assume that role. And as I said, maybe develop further personally. I'd also like to see what they're going to do with Jack Hodgson after he survived that terrible neurotoxin, if they're going to develop his character a little more. And I'm very curious to see who takes on the slots that are now open.
Absolutely. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you, Laurel, about Silent Witness. And thank you very, very much for all your help and participation in the Real Silent Witnesses podcast.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is my first podcast, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. And I love talking about a series that is so fascinating to me.
Thanks for listening to The Real Silent Witnesses, inside the Silent Witness TV show. In the last hour, I've chatted with US journalist Laurel Graber about how she binge-watched the show during the pandemic and how lockdowns around the world have helped the series thrive. Personally, I wasn't aware that the show had become so popular, even in the US. Laurel and I have come to the conclusion that it is virtually impossible to stick to reality when it comes to TV dramas, and that a little invention makes them much more enjoyable. Obviously, the views and thoughts I've expressed in this podcast are entirely my own. It's a free world and you can think whatever you want.
Make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you like the show, we would appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts and tell a friend about it.
For a more in-depth analysis into forensics, check out my audiobook, The Real Silent Witnesses, which is available at all good stores, including Audible and Apple Books, published by W.F. Howes. Be sure to tune in next week for our latest episode. And remember, the dead tell us everything.